Hello, I'm Maxi B, and this is Friendship, Effort, Victory, a podcast about the history and inner workings of Weekly Shonen Jump. This episode's choice of Ryu Fujisaki work to spotlight is the big one, the title that immortalized him both in the East and the West, an adaptation of an ancient Chinese tale that skirts both action and comedy while somehow planting its feet on the borders of Eastern fantasy and science fiction. To say Fujisaki plays fast and loose with genre at this point is an understatement, but what I just said is radically simplifying the odd choices of Hoshinengi, the late 90s mainstay from Weekly Shonen Jump, and an excellent example of how you can play with your source material to make a tale all your own. To best understand Hoshinengi, we need to travel back to its source material, the 16th century literary epic Fengshen Yanyi, and indeed to the source of that, the actual Shang and Zhou dynasties, which is a heck of a challenge, it must be said. The gist of the actual historical account is that Dizin, the last king of the Shang, was an amoral ruler in his later years, throwing festive orgies and creating crude songs, generally being quite inappropriate as a leader goes. More than him, though, was his wife Daji, who herself was considered despicable to an extreme, a manipulative and sociopathic woman who would use her good standing with her husband to commit various atrocities. Dizin was so infatuated with her and intent on pleasing her, he'd not only grant any request of hers, but went as far as to throw a party for 3,000 people with, quote-unquote, a pond of wine and a forest of meat. He even went as far as to execute one of his concubines when she protested their debauchery, and then had her father ground into pieces and fed to one of his vassals. What can you even say to that? But yeah, what Dizin did for Daji was one thing, but what she did for herself was reportedly much, much worse. It was said that her greatest joy was to hear people scream in pain, and would inflict such pain upon people to satisfy her curiosity. A few choice examples would be her having the feet cut off a farmer who could walk barefoot upon ice so she could learn why they're so endurant, having the heart of Dizin's uncle cut out to see if the saying, a good man's heart has seven apertures, was true, and having a pregnant woman's belly slit so she can see what happens inside. Suffice to say, Daji was crazy, no matter how you swing it. She was thought to have invented several methods of torture and punishment, including a pit of vipers to throw those who disobey her into, and a red-hot iron pillar coated in oil and surrounded by burning coal, where the tortured must cling and climb this boiling pillar to avoid fiery death on the coals below. Which is intense. This behaviour, along with a tendency to let the common people of their land starve, leads to the Zhou rising up and taking out the Shang, having both Dizin and Daji executed for their crimes against humanity. A relatively nice ending, though I've never checked whether the Zhou dynasty led to prosperity and happiness after all those bad times with the Shang, but really, it's just this tale of Dizin and Daji being crazy evil and getting overthrown that really matters, as that tale is at the very core of the Ming dynasty epic Fengshen Yanyi, which helps me do this whole crazy long chain explaining what Hoshinengi even is. Fengshen Yanyi itself is a fictionalized account of these events by Zhu Zongling, using a bunch of bits of Chinese mythology to spice things up from a brutal historic event to a tale of immortals and spirits, amongst other things. It's a hell of a length at that, being some 100 chapters of a large variety of tales, but Daji once again is at the core of everything in her strange, charismatically evil way. The story here is that Daji is actually a vixen spirit disguised as a beautiful woman, corrupting the King of Shang with her wily ways, and that, as before, her cruel acts have prompted the Zhou to action, with King Wuazhu, I love saying that, getting an army together to wage war and take down Daji and the corrupted Dizin. He's helped in this task by a great military strategist, Zhang Ziya, who has a special list, the Fengshen Bang, granted to him by God that allows him to call upon the assistance of the gods of heaven. And so begins a back-and-forth battle between the Zhou, with their heavenly beings, and the Shang, with their evil spirits. Not that that's all of the plot, else it'd just be a really old cliché battle manga. No, what we have instead for a lot of it are peculiar anecdotal tales that fit into the larger scheme of things. What sort of tales? Good ones! Horrible researcher that I am, I'm just going to go ahead and go for the more famous ones as listed by that most reputable source known as Wikipedia, which is remarkably like being a student, really. I guess one of the most important and earliest of the tales is the origin of Daji, and it is a bit of a gem, truth to tell. See, Dizin, who is actually referred to as King Zhou most of the time, but that's really confusing because it's a different Zhou to his enemies, the Zhou, so do you think it is? Visits the temple of the goddess Nua and basically comes onto a statue of her. Wait, sounds wrong. I mean, he is inappropriate towards the statue of her, saying he'd like to marry Nua. Oh, and, you know, scrawling poems on the walls of the temple talking about how he'd bone her and stuff. You know, as you do when you're king. Nua, understandably, takes offence to this and sends down three spirits, the vixen, pheasant, and piper, which is a sort of musical instrument, to hasten the downfall of this oafish ruler. The king becomes obsessed with them because they're all about looking like beautiful women, as spirits are wont to do, and as such he starts to neglect state affairs and become a foolish and cruel tyrant, with Daji as the greatest of these spirits holding him in her sway. Simple enough as far as these go, but it's the origin of the whole dang tale, so it had better be, really. The other important tale is that of Zhang Ziya, a former student of the deity Yuan Shi Tianzen, at the relatively young age of 72. He is a quirky person who has the habit of fishing with his straight, non-dangerous hook dangling 3 foot above the actual water. This is not to catch fish as much as to wait for someone who wants to be hooked by him, which in his desires is a wise ruler who recognises his worth. This person comes along and is in fact Ji Chang, a duke from an earlier story who was fed his own son by Daji and had sworn to build up an army and take vengeance upon her in response, because really, what else are you going to do at that point other than feel really depressed that you ate your child? He comes to Zhang Ziya and helps pull his car, and each step he takes forwards was to be another year his kingdom would exist for. After Ji Cheng manages to take 800 steps, Zhang Ziya is suitably impressed and becomes his chancellor, aiding him in creating this destined kingdom. These two tales, plus the actual one where Ji Chang eats his son, lay the foundations for the story, and are so much more than the spiritual warfare I initially described it as, which is apropos to our manga of choice this week, Hoshinengi, in that that itself is so much more than your typical shonen manga. Clearly, the source material's strengths rub off. But yes, Hoshinengi takes this huge story and turns it into something that's, if you can excuse the cynicism involved in saying this, marketable to the kids of the time, that time being the middle of 1996? This is largely achieved by making a lot of these horrid events darkly humorous, and changing up Zhang Ziya into something a bit less old man-ish. Which is odd now I think about it, because his character is actually still 72 years old, and very much talks like an old man, he just looks younger. Which, considering Ryu Fujisaki's tendency to make old men look like the grossest things ever, is probably for the best. Zhang Ziya is now transformed for the purposes of Fujisaki's reimagining as the lazy and immature Taiko Bo, a weirdly dressed disciple of the great Genshi Tenson, and one of the many immortals living in the land of Konran Son. He's a bit of a lazy slacker and prefers to do his weird fishing over doing anything actually productive, but all the same he is chosen for the Hoshin Project, where he is to go down to Earth and see all the evil demons plaguing it, including the evil fox spirit Daki, who is controlling the Emperor Chuo, to be able to live life as she chooses, with luxury and cruel acts available to her at a moment's notice. As I'm sure you've worked out, Daki is Hoshinengi's rendition of Daji, and is herself turned from a sociopathic crazy into more of a wacky evil with a bit of ambiguity to her. Like, yeah, she'll feed a son to a father, but she'll do it by having the son made into hamburgers. And she'll invent the red hot pillars, but she'll actually build them herself in a modern workman get-up and safety hat. This doesn't stop her from having her intimidating creepy moments, but rather gives us an angle on the character that actually has room for more depth than just being a crazy woman. To go about his task of finding and sealing all 365 spirits for the Hoshin Project, Taiko Bo is given the Hoshin Scroll, giving us another slight parallel to the original material, but this being for knowing which souls to seal rather than a tool for using the gods to his benefit, and a Palpei, a sort of mystical weapon that people with special bones can use in battles and the like. Taiko Bo's is the Dashinben, which is the god-hitting whip, capable of creating long-distance attacks using wind. And if you can think of a cooler name for a weapon than God-hitting whip, then you are some sort of mystical being yourself, because that is perfect. With these two things in hand, Taiko Bo travels with his trusty hippo-deer-looking steed, Supushan, to the mortal realm and begins his quest. All fairly straightforward, and not in itself directly opposed to the original story, even less so once Taiko Bo adjusts his strategy to install a new emperor and remove Daki from her position of power. The brunt of Taiko Bo's adventures from there are, as to be expected, a bizarre twist on the original tales with Taiko Bo and his chosen Emperor Buo, this time a second son of the man who was made to eat his other son rather than the man himself, who in this version chose to starve to death rather than eat his son, because I guess that's slightly better for something aimed at 10 to 13 year olds. And he travels the land with Buo, building up their army, conquering lands, and preparing to defeat the Yin. Oh, that's a thing. The Shang dynasty is now the Yin dynasty, and the Zhu is now the Shu. Just a heads up in case I bring that up again and you get confused. A large part of this is Taikobo recruiting further Senin, those with the special bones, and teaming up with them in life-or-death battles to further their aims. This is really where Fujisaki gets to shine, creating mountains of characters, each with their own weird designs and weaponry, to make them stand out amongst the rest. The art here isn't quite as strong out the gate as, say, Sakura Tetsu Taiwahen or Wok Wok, but this intent on making every slightly important character look so different to each other pays off massively over the first couple of years before Fujisaki's art gets polished enough to pull its own weight. Taikobo is one thing with his instantly recognisable silhouette, but characters like the human weapon Nataku, the pretty boy genius Yozen, or the unfortunate devil-looking Raishinshi all look so unlike anyone else in the story, and frankly, they have crazy designs. It works so well. Sure, some of the characters have that whole overly busy thing going on that Fujisaki tends towards, but in a cast as ridiculously large as this, it's still a hell of an achievement. Although, all that considered, my favourite design is still Bakichi, who is basically just a superpowered modern-day teen in a tracksuit, so maybe there is something more to the designs than just how they can stand out. As the war continues between Taikobo and Daki's sides, more and more casualties pile up, most of them being transported to the Hoshin Dai, where all the sealed spirits were to go when Taikobo had vanquished them, and the war escalated to involve the worlds of the Senin, Konmon, the good one Taikobo is from, and the other one where the less savoury types come from, King-O, and just about everyone is defeated and sealed away, with those two worlds utterly desolate. But Taikobo comes out on top and installs Buo as new emperor. Daki and her cohorts retreat, apparently to a third Senin world, and the war seems to have finally come to an end. Not entirely removed from Feng Xiangyang Yi, yet still very much doing things in the weird, comedic, dramatic stylings the author has become known for. Then, okay, no, take a deep breath and skip ahead a few minutes to that bit at the end where I tell you to buy it if you don't want spoilers, because this is where I talk about the ending, which is weird. Like, you can't even imagine. Okay? Okay. So it turns out all of this epic warfare and capturing of spirits was actually a plan by Genshi Tenson to prepare to battle one of the quote-unquote original people, beings who predated all others on Earth and kind of made everything as it is. In fact, this particular original person didn't just do that, but rather continually keeps destroying and remaking everything in an attempt to replicate her lost home planet. Because the original people are space aliens. Which is a logical progression for this ancient fantasy setting, yeah? Oh, and Taikobo is half of one of these space aliens named Fuki, and he reunites with his other half, the evil Otenkun from Daki's side of the war, and they fuse together to become Fuki and deal with this other alien, who Daki then possesses and uses to fuse with the Earth so that she can become the mother of all life. So, it's weird. A weird turn for a series that was already quite peculiar. I'm being quite vague with the individual storylines in Hoshinengi, but this last one is so worthy of examination as such a crucial part of the title. Prior to this, Hoshinengi had been so set on using Feng Xiangyang Yi for its story, referencing it heavily to create fresh twists on the tales. As such, we had a fantasy title far removed from Fujisaki's standard trappings of science fiction, but still retaining his tendency towards weird humour. By opening up the floodgates to this twist, we get something that both betrays the series setting on some scale, and that allows Fujisaki to really do something completely within his own wheelhouse, with a test of his writing abilities and making sci-fi that can actually work in this sort of ancient fantasy setting. It never really happens, and in this case it pays off magnificently. This switch up shouldn't have worked, but it being a step towards something that Fujisaki excels at, made for something completely natural and digestible, and more than that, made for an excellent way to wrap up the series. There's a tendency for comics to soil the bed when closing off their long-form storylines. After years of telling these epic tales or building up to something huge, they can fall flat when trying to give that final payoff, or, heaven forfend, never actually give a proper ending to what they're doing. For every Stars, there's a Hikaru no Go or even a Shaman King, where the ending just feels so lacking compared to everything that came before. Or, Actually, Shaman King's a poor example because its original ending wasn't just lacking, it was completely ready absent. But that's another episode. My point is that you can easily have a book that just doesn't do anything special enough for the ending. Hoshinengi did just about the most special thing by increasing the stakes and making everything you thought you knew wrong. The final arc is just so significant. You can't help but feel your attention is needed when you're getting something so crazily different. And of course, it helps that it's good, but still. That's not to downplay everything that comes before. What Ryu Fujisaki achieves with the majority of Hoshinengi is a series of sizable arcs showing off conflicts that aren't strictly about brute force and are intent on not being dry experiences. Taikobo as a hero isn't strong or even that capable, but rather just intelligent. Characters have to display their wits in conflicts, else fall by the wayside, or worse, lose and get sealed in a Hoshin die. And with wits comes opportunities for Fujisaki to display his trademark weird humour. Taikobo's old man mannerisms are one thing, but stuff like the human weapon, the Taku's violent, expressionless reactions to just about anything, Bakichi's ridiculous feats of strength, Naki doing just about anything, they're all just surreally funny. Like Sakura Tetsu Taiwahen, it's less funny ha-ha and more, oh, that's funny, isn't it? But that's pretty much exactly what you expect when dealing with this author. And it does this for 23 volumes, with nary a weak moment amongst them. Truly a great achievement. The anime adaptation? Less so. Adaptations tend to have a certain amount of decay, where some things won't be treated quite the same, and Hoshinengi's anime, known in the US as Soul Hunter, is no exception. A lot of the subtleties are lost, and it being so much shorter than the manga means that a lot of the same ground isn't covered, including that final arc, leaving the story as a more straightforward confrontation between Taikobo and Daki, who loses a lot of her subtlety as a character who isn't just evil, but rather just stays as the one true opponent of the title. It's unfortunate, but at least it can be said to be enjoyable in itself, and is a good starting point for a lot of people, having been released in America long before the manga ever was, making it a strong point of reference to a lot of long-term anime viewers. If you want to get your hands on Hoshinengi, you're in luck, as the entire series is currently in print from Viz Media, and it running a decent medium length by Shonen Jump standards at around 23 volumes means that giving it a go won't break the bank either. You can also get it in the original Japanese in funky, incredibly gorgeous Kanzanban editions that replicate the colour art and have swank new covers from whatever provider of import books you have available to you, be it Amazon, Kinokuniya, or another one. Not just that, but most of the separate volumes of the Soul Hunter anime are available in America or importable anywhere else in the world if you've got yourself a region-free player, naturally. There's even audio dramas and the like available if you've got an ear for Japanese and are feeling fancy. And there's video games that I'm not sure you can actually find because they're old and all Japanese. All the same, it's a multimedia meltdown. The only thing it's lacking is a digital release on the Viz manga service, which, you know, Viz. Come on, do it. You know you want to. Hoshinengi, vizmanga.com. You know you want it on there. Think of it. Think of the money you might make. I don't know how Hoshinengi sold for Viz. I hope it did well. If you want to see show notes for the episode, head over to friendshipeffortvictory.wordpress.com, where you'll also find a link to the iTunes page where new episodes come out now and then, alternating between the full-blown episodes like this and the smaller minisodes like the upcoming Wok Wok, an absolutely ace sci-fi series by Ryu Fujisaki, and indeed the final part of the Fujisaki season, and about time too. It'll also be 4 episodes from the end of the series. We're almost done. You can also subscribe, either by the RSS feed or an aforementioned iTunes page, where you can also leave a review if such a thing strikes your fancy. Apparently it helps the show, and while we're at this, yes, the iTunes feed is broken. I'm trying to get it to update for these last few episodes. Until then, I'm afraid you'll just have to use the site, but it will be fixed, I promise you. Oh, and there's links to where you can find me on the interwebs. There's my Twitter, where you can follow me, my email, where you can contact me, and my Tumblr, where you can find bonus material, crucial information about Series 2, where you, the listener, can be a part of it, as well as a bunch of posts relevant to mine and your interests.